Williamsburg to Beaver Falls, Pittsburgh to St. Mary's, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, from statewide elections to legislative policy battles, 2018 has been quite a year. David Taylor is joined for a Capitol Watch Year in Review by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Steve Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. And having already once subverted the state constitution to re-gerrymander congressional district lines, Democrats have now taken aim at hijacking the 2021 redistricting. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Just when you thought the 2018 midterm elections were over, a challenge has emerged to the seating of State Senator-elect Lindsey Williams. Williams scored a narrow win in an Allegheny County district to replace State Senator Randy Volokovic, who was defeated in the primary. Senate Republicans, however, claim she failed to meet a constitutional requirement to have been a resident of Pennsylvania for 4 years prior to her election. It seems Williams voted in Maryland on November 4, 2014, and later that month received a speeding ticket that showed she was a Maryland resident. This past week, Williams turned over more than 100 pages of documents in an attempt to prove her residency. Included in those documents, statements from family and friends. Under the state constitution, the Senate itself sits in final judgment of who meets the constitutional requirements to be seated. Republicans hold 29 seats in the 50-seat body and thus control the process. Senate President pro tempore Joseph Scarnati says he intends to resolve the issue later this month. Even though voters were inundated with ads during this year's gubernatorial election, the campaigns failed to set a spending record. Post-election campaign expense reports show Governor Tom Wolf and his Republican challenger Scott Wagner together spent over $64 million on the campaign, but that fell short of the $82 million candidates spent in 2014. In securing his re-election victory, Wolf outspent Wagner $31 million to $22 million. Labor unions supplied most of Wolf's cash, while Wagner was the largest donor to his own campaign. In the corruption file, State Representative Vanessa Lowry Brown resigned this past week in the wake of her conviction on bribery and related charges. The Philadelphia Democrat had initially refused to relinquish her office, but House Speaker Mike Terzai said her seat was immediately considered to be vacant, as the state constitution makes convicted felons ineligible to serve in the General Assembly. Brown had resisted submitting a formal resignation and has indicated she plans to appeal her conviction. She continues to maintain she is the victim of entrapment. Her seat will now be filled in a special election sometime after the first of the new year. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. The 2017-2018 legislative session has ended and the midterm elections are past. Before we get to a year-ending, hopefully silent night, our Capitol Watch crew takes a look back at what happened this past year. Rebecca Euler and Steve Bloom join David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association for this roundtable discussion. Dave?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, David. Good to be here again.
Well, and we want to welcome to the program, for the first time in his new incarnation, our friend Steve Bloom, who is now the Vice President for Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're doing, I guess this is the last show of 2018, and so it's probably fitting that we do a retrospective and look back on the year that was I suppose, you know, we already did an election wrap-up, but certainly the year began with, you know, high-stakes campaigns for the most prominent elected positions in Pennsylvania, the governor and the U.S. Senate, and certainly all of the state legislative seats also. And so at the end of the year, we're looking at how that all hashed out.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that being said, and there was so much high stakes drama, and all the talk nationally and in Pennsylvania of the blue wave, the expected sort of Democratic flood of election victories, and while the Democrats did end up getting some victories, the results of the so-called blue wave were essentially status quo for Pennsylvania.
Right.
We ended up in the same place. We have a Democratic governor, Governor Wolf, back for another 4 years, or expecting to, as soon as he's inaugurated in January, he'll be back for another 4 years. The legislative bodies, the House and the Senate, both under firm Republican control. The majorities are a little slimmer, but still historic majorities, 110 to 93 in the House, Republican majority, 29 to 21, or possibly 29 to 20, depending on certain outcomes of some issues surrounding one of the elections. In the Senate, Republican majority, status quo, the same majorities that have stood against Governor Wolf and his tax and spend agenda for the last 4 years are back in place.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. Like you say, that for all of the things that happened in terms of the hype and the expectations and the endless campaign and all of the ads and all those things, that eventually we wound up where we started. Rebecca, what are your reflections on sort of the year gone by?
No, Steve is absolutely right. I'm sort of trying to look forward to the next year, and I think we're going to end up having a lot of the same fights that we've been having, you know, over the past couple years with Governor Wolf and the Republicans in the legislature. So we're probably going to be talking about tax increases some more. And as has happened, you know, in the past, the Republicans are going to try to stop those efforts to increase taxes across the board with the governor. And we're going to see things like proposed minimum wage increases, which, again, the Republicans in the legislature are going to have to deal with. So I think we're going to see sort of a rehash of a lot of the same issues, and we're going to have to watch that going forward.
As Yogi Berra said, it's deja vu all over
and it's,
again.
It's fascinating because since Governor Wolf was first elected 4 years ago, his agenda has been boxed in. Now, he proposed, I believe, a $4.3 billion tax increase on his first budget address 4 years ago. He wanted to expand state spending dramatically, very dramatically, by billions of dollars. He was pushing hard for a statewide minimum wage increase. He was pushing hard for a new third taxation on Pennsylvania energy, which he called the severance tax, but it's really just a third tax on production of natural gas in Pennsylvania. There's already two taxes on it, and he would have added a third. Those items that he wanted, that he pushed so hard for year after year, none of them got done. And that's good for Pennsylvania and good for Pennsylvania business. We're starting to see finally, by holding the line and along with the impacts of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act
at the federal level. Yeah.
Pennsylvania business finally really having a resurgence. Obviously, hiring is up. Unemployment is very low. Wages are starting to rise. Tax revenues are starting to rise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all good news because to increase revenues to the state, the worst way to do it is with a tax hike.
Right.
The only good way to do it is when the economy itself gets so much stronger that folks are making so much more money that they actually pay a little more in taxes.
Exactly.
That's the healthy way to increase revenues and the appropriate way rather than by punishing taxpayers with higher tax
rates. Taking more money out of the private economy. Well, one of the things that everybody was looking to as 2018 unfolded was, which of the 20 locations is going to pull down the great prize of the second Amazon headquarters. And in the end, as folks have likely heard, that Jeff Bezos split it up into two two projects, one going into Northern Virginia across the river from Washington, D.C., another going to New York City, and that Pittsburgh and Philadelphia were on the finalist list, but didn't get chosen. One of the things that's curious, though, is that the Commonwealth put together a package of tax breaks and incentives and whatnot, and that the governor, although he's acting on behalf of us, the people, that he wouldn't honor public information requests about how big the giveaway was going to be.
It's interesting, David, because not only did the governor want to keep it all close to the vest, we do know that he was proposing special tax breaks and incentives on a very, very high level, hundreds of millions of dollars. And in a state where we've had difficulty closing budgets over those kind of numbers, where that's been a very significant gap that the legislature has worked very hard to close and has really given rise to some intense legislative maneuvering just to wrap up a budget over those kind of numbers. Somehow the governor was able to find that kind of money to simply give away to a favored company that is
owned by the world's richest man.
Owned by the world's richest man, competing intensely with Pennsylvania small businesses at every level. And yet we don't offer those same kind of tax breaks in a uniform way to our actual Pennsylvania entrepreneurs who have been scratching out a living here in our state and here in our Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm. The amazing thing is that those tax benefits that the governor offered weren't enough. They weren't enough to make Pennsylvania's business, right? Make Pennsylvania's business climate attractive enough to Amazon, which I think should tell us something, that our business climate here in the state absolutely needs retooling. And to your point, it's the small businesses and it's the, you know, sort of Main Street community businesses and manufacturers and farmers that really need the tax improvements here in the state, and that's what we need to work on.
And what would that mean to your members in NFIB if they were to receive that kind of money in a uniform tax reduction of some kind that would help small businesses?
Well, I think that would be fantastic. We've seen the results at the federal level. After the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, when investment, was able to be brought back into the economy and you saw businesses gearing up and investing and expanding. And for quite some time, small business optimism has been at historic highs. They've been hiring, they've been raising wages, and they've been putting money back into their businesses. And that has worked at the federal level. If we could manage to improve Pennsylvania's tax climate like that, we could see that benefit even more here in Pennsylvania. That would be great.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. We had what they described as an election year budget. What's meant by that?
An election year budget is one where I think all sides are attempting to avoid controversy and delay. And we saw that for the first time in his 4 years, Governor Wolf actually signed a budget.
Mm-hmm.
The previous three budgets had been enacted by the legislature essentially over the governor's objections, and he never actually was willing to veto them. But on the same token, he wasn't willing to sign them. And by Pennsylvania law, if a governor does nothing after 10 days, legislation that's enacted simply becomes law. There are IFO reports that came out in the last week or so that indicate there's going to be a gap to close for next year's budget. However, the governor's budget secretary just gave a speech indicating that he doesn't see much of a gap. He thinks the IFO's revenue estimates and versus cost estimates, the gap that they identified is not really so large. It's actually much, much smaller. And he painted a picture that we're going to look at an easier to close budget again next year, which means this year's budget was pretty much on point. Hard to know who to believe in these circumstances. The IFO obviously is the statewide nonpartisan agency that's supposed to understand the budget, but they're not always right.
Mm-hmm.
The appropriation chairs of each legislative body and the respective caucuses will all weigh in with their numbers. But it looks like the budget that was enacted for 2018, 2019 was actually fairly spot on.
Well, of course, as I look back over the year that was, one of the things that comes to mind is the governor taking action through his Department of Revenue. And it was literally the Friday before Christmas at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in 2017 that they released an order that they were going to disallow depreciation, so that not only would Pennsylvania companies not get the benefits through the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but that the Commonwealth was going to disallow depreciation altogether. And it took us, it took us through to the end of the budget, June 30, to get that fixed. And that after the bill was passed, the governor signed it, that he staged a ceremonial signing, so essentially taking credit for fixing a problem that he caused. So
he also went on the campaign trail and called himself the small business governor after literally sabotaging small businesses' ability to survive.
Correct.
The federal tax law increased bonus depreciation at the federal level so that it was meant to incentivize businesses to invest in their business, to expand,
to buy
gear so that they could expand their businesses, buy equipment, buy machinery, and then depreciate that over time. The bonus depreciation was, I believe, $1 million at the federal level. It was increased from $500,000 to $1 million, yeah, I believe. But in Pennsylvania, like you said, the governor's action just disallowed bonus depreciation altogether. So when we were trying to attract after the federal tax law passed, of course, all the states were trying to attract businesses to come and invest in their states, and Pennsylvania was at a distinct disadvantage because of our policy on bonus depreciation. And we'll never know how many businesses or what investment we lost as a result of those 8 months with no depreciation here in Pennsylvania. So it really did hamper economic investment and development here in the state for quite some time. And it's like you said, it was a crisis that was created. It didn't have to happen, and it was actually created. So that was very frustrating. And we had to expend a lot of energy to try and get it reversed.
Right.
So a lot of energy that we could have spent on trying to get real things accomplished.
It shouldn't be this hard.
It's probably worth noting, too, just for folks who aren't haven't studied accounting lately.
Right.
Bonus depreciation has nothing to do with bonuses. It's not a tax on people who are making so much money they're giving it away in bonuses. It has nothing to do with that. It's about allowing a person who invests in their business to get essentially a credit for making that investment, which is an investment in the Commonwealth, and to take a tax credit for that during usually the first year where they've actually made the
exactly.
investment.
And that's where the bonus lay, because the under traditional tax policy that you're allowed to depreciate, meaning write off a portion of an asset over time because things wear out, the bonus is to bring all of that depreciation, all that tax benefit forward in time to the year during which the investment is made.
To encourage people to actually – in particular to invest in Pennsylvania and create jobs here.
Yes. The larger message that sends to the rest of the nation, to all potential investors, about whether or not you can trust the Commonwealth to be a fair partner – it's unwelcome. It's not good.
I think the other thing that bothers me so much about that particular issue was that it was done by an executive action. So it was an executive action that was done that had no involvement of the state legislature. It was a reinterpretation of policy. And I think it goes to the point that, we have a lot of issues with power vested in the executive. And I think that makes the perfect point. We see it in areas like regulatory issues with environmental permitting, for example, and those types of things where we have executive actions that take place outside of the legislative process. And that was one that I think was really problematic.
That's been a pattern with Governor Wolf during his entire first term.
Yes,
it continued
this
year. Back a couple of years ago, myself and Representative Seth Grove actually had to become plaintiffs in a constitutional law suit that was filed in Commonwealth Court when the governor, by executive action, unilaterally attempted to abolish a statutorily established pension watchdog agency. And we filed suit because the governor was trying to simply go around the voice of the people, which is the legislature, and do this on his own. We won the case easily, and the governor hasn't apparently, though, learned his lesson. He's continuing to do those kind of things, take these executive actions that he does not consult with the equal branch of government, which is the legislature.
Well, it's, you know, these are all patterns. This is an experience that we've had over time, and as was said at the outset, because we've had, you know, a status quo kind of election, that we'll have the same, you know, the same correlation of forces going into the new term of the General Assembly. But of course, the challenges before the Commonwealth remain when it comes to, you know, the, you know, job creation and economic vitality and government accountability and all those other things that affect, you know, how well or how poorly Harrisburg functions and again, the overall quality of life for people in the Commonwealth. So, yeah, I don't know what to say about 2018 other than mostly, I guess I would say, good riddance. And, you know, but mercifully we get a new year to start over and hopefully make more progress on building a better and brighter future for Pennsylvania. So, anyway, as we wind up with, you know, just the last little bit that we have here, Steve just wanted to say, welcome aboard with CF. We're so pleased to have you, to continue to have you as a friend, but now as an ally in the policy world.
Thank you, David.
And
for me, I'm just honored that I have an opportunity to stay in the policy fight. That's the most important thing for me. It's why I ran for office to begin with 8 years ago, and I'm delighted that I'll have a role in continuing to shape good pro-economic growth policy in Pennsylvania over the coming years.
Well, we're glad to have you around. Where can people go to learn more about you and your organization?
They can go to commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, can you tell us where to find NFIB and to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
Sure. They can find more information at nfib.com/PA. We're also on Facebook and Twitter.
Outstanding. Well, as ever, thanks to you for listening to the program. From Rebecca and Steve and me, we wish all of you very happy holidays and a happy new year. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Emboldened by the success of their strategy to re-gerrymander Pennsylvania's congressional districts, Democrats have set their sights on gaining control over the redrawing of district lines that will occur upon completion of the 2020 census. By way of review, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court earlier this year ruled the district maps, approved back in 2011 in a bipartisan and previously court-approved process, amounted to unconstitutional gerrymandering. The decision was rendered by new justices who in 2015 unethically campaigned on issuing just such a ruling should they be elected to the bench. The new Democrat justices then imposed new district lines by judicial fiat in what many correctly saw as a violation of provisions in both the federal and state constitutions. But since the Supreme Court is the final arbiter of what is constitutional, the only recourse would have been impeachment by the General Assembly. Even as they watched the High Court emasculate their legislative powers, lawmakers could only muster howls of protest while taking no substantial action. At the end of the day, the court-ordered map, artfully gerrymandered in its own right, was implemented. And when the dust settled, Democrats picked up 4 congressional seats, contributing to a national wave of wins that saw Republicans lose majority control in the U.S. House of Representatives. Having used unethical and extra-constitutional means to achieve that end, Governor Tom Wolf has launched yet another end run against the established process with an eye to controlling the 2021 redistricting. He has impaneled a 15-member commission supposedly to improve the redistricting process. Senate President pro tempore Joe Scarnati, who allowed the Supreme Court to get away with its last power grab, protested that Wolf has no power to set up such a commission, failed to consult with the General Assembly in selecting its members, and charged the commission fails to represent rural Pennsylvania. Knowing the legislature is a lion that roars but does not bite, Wolf proceeded with naming the commission. keeping in mind that words such as fair districts, reform, and improving the process are merely code for stacking the process in favor of Democrats, Wolf reeled off high-sounding rhetoric while, in fact, naming a commission guaranteed to continue the hijacking of the 2021 redistricting. He named as chairman of the commission the head of a Philadelphia-based organization posing as a good government group. The League of Women Voters, another Democrat front group, has a seat at the table, as does higher education and urban affairs representatives. To balance partisan Democrats on the commission, the governor appointed Charlie Dent, a former Republican congressman well known for his left-leaning ideology. In short, the commission is stacked with those whose mission it is to overthrow the state constitution and ensure the illicit methodology implemented by partisan Democrats this year supplants the orderly process that for decades has passed court muster. Exactly what is that process? Congressional redistricting takes the form of a bill, which must be approved by both houses of the General Assembly and then be signed into law by the governor. To win legislative approval, the congressional redistricting bill must go through the same process as any other legislation. It is drafted, there are hearings, there is a committee vote, followed by a floor vote in each chamber. Both houses must agree on an identical bill for it to be sent to the governor for signature. In other words, the very same process by which any other law is enacted is how we do congressional redistricting. For the governor and his partisan left-wing allies to suggest that process is unfair is to suggest our entire system of government is unfair. Here is what the governor is actually saying. Republicans control both houses of the General Assembly and are likely to remain in control through the 2021 redistricting. That means the GOP will largely control the process, although the governor can wield his veto pen as an endgame. That's not good enough for Tom Wolf. He wants to subvert having elected representatives use the legislative process and instead have the job done by an unelected commission, which he would appoint. Not only is that unconstitutional, but it undermines the very separation of powers foundation upon which our republic is built. This time, Senator Scarnati and his fellow legislative leaders need to do more than just talk. They need to stand up to Wolf and his power grab because this time, the very essence of our constitutional republic is at stake. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WQZS-FM in Myersdale, WMGW-AM in Meadville, along with WMSS-FM in Middletown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.